Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to email us at ForgottenFailuresCast@gmail.com or visit ForgottenFailuresCast.com.
Now, I'm not saying that I believe in all this mumbo-jumbo, but the elders say, you are the one. Here's your chance. You want survival? You got it. Either you help me rescue my father, or I'd blow your balls off.
What's in it for me?
Hi guys, welcome to the Forgotten Failures. This is Mike.
This is also Mike.
This is Lindsay.
And this is Daryl.
We went counterclockwise today. That's kind of cool.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
To those watching on the live stream, I'm sure you were really freaked out by that.
Also, I'm freaked out that there's a live stream now.
Yeah.
That looks like a TV over there.
Big brother, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a podcast where we review forgotten movies, mm-hmm. forgotten by the sands of time.
Sands of time.
I don't know.
It works.
But we watch obscure movies. More obscure movies. Movies that have never been on DVD or were latecomers to the DVD. They were on demand.
So yeah, I don't think this is
on demand of the era.
Yeah, on demand of the era.
It did say HBO on the cover.
It
so
did. I didn't understand that.
Yeah, a lot of movies. Yeah, I think Collision Course said that too.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Big distributor back then.
Which the cover of this was kind of the reason why we picked it. It looked pretty cool.
It looked cool.
It looked like an old Nintendo game where the art vastly improved upon the gameplay.
Yeah, well, it just sort of implies that every single thing in the movie happens at once.
Well, it's kind
of
like, you know those like Facebook games, like all the farm ones, or like the battle ones, or like little apps. That, like, there are commercials for those where it's like, oh yeah, this looks really fucking awesome and intense, and then you actually see it, and it's just like a top down.
Like,
yeah, it's just a really crappy.
Well, I played Columns in 1994.
What was that, a Tetris ripoff?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Columns.
Get with the times, bro.
Yeah, I have to say those ads for Boom Beach are really funny.
Yeah, it's basically like that. Like, the cover is like a really awesome representation. It's artwork for the movie. Yeah. It makes it look really cool.
And what movie are we talking about?
We are talking about...
This is a movie from another time.
1983.
In a distant land.
Italy.
There was...
Warriors.
The Warrior of the Lost World.
Il Giustiziere della Terra Perduta.
That's
the Warrior of the Lost World.
Warrior of the Lost World. Just the one warrior. Yeah. Not warriors.
There are a lot of warriors in this movie.
There are a lot of warriors.
It's just the one, though. And it's the only, it's just the one world, too.
Yeah.
Not those other worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, the main character, the warrior, I'm guessing, doesn't even have a name in the movie.
Yeah, he does have a name. It's the poor man's Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Who's also looks like D.B. Sweeney.
Yeah, his name in the movie is the Rider. Yeah,
Rider.
Rider.
Like Rider Strong?
Yeah.
Like Knight Rider, which came out on TV a year before this and may have influenced this movie's talking motorcycle.
Maybe.
Yeah, but he mostly looks like if Russell Crowe had a baby with a chipmunk.
And was allergic to everything.
Yeah, he's a very puffy Russell Crowe. Yeah.
And Russell Crowe is a puffy Russell Crowe.
Yeah, so just imagine that. Or watch the movie.
You know what? Watch the movie because all this like making fun of it, it's a really good movie.
It is.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, actor Robert Ginty was only 35 at the time, whereas Russell Crowe didn't become puffy until about 45, 40.
I guess he was almost there.
We need a Russell Crowe puffy scale.
We do. A puffiness scale.
Yeah.
So not to be confused with the Sean Combs puffy scale.
Yes. Different scale.
Yeah, that goes from puffy to Diddy.
Yeah.
It goes from Sean Puffy Combs. Yeah.
Okay, so Diddy would represent emaciation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Scale of face fat levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Diddy is actually Diddy Kong. So.
This Kong.
So there's your scale right there.
Face.
Use it in your everyday life if you can.
That is a terrible idea.
So this movie didn't have a whole lot of plot. So I don't think it's going to take more than...
Yeah, this was made
60. I would say you could do this in 30 seconds if you wanted to break it down.
Do you want to try that?
I think so.
Let's do it.
What do you think? What time?
A 30-second Mike D break D.
Yeah.
How about 37 seconds?
37
is 38.
Okay.
Well, 38 it is.
It's done.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
Go.
Okay, so in the future world, there is an organization called Omega that is basically the police. Donald Pleasance runs the police, and he enforces an Orwellian society. This motorcycle rider guy drives through a wall and is discovered by Fred Williamson and a bunch of Mon Mothmas who represent the elders, who represent wisdom, and they get him back on his motorcycle after his crash, and he leads a bunch of rebels to destroy Donald Pleasance and the Omega Warriors. And there are a lot of car chases, and there's a mega weapon at the end, which his talking motorcycle helps him defeat, although the talking motorcycle has to commit suicide, and that's very sad, but obviously they win.
All right. There we go.
Well done.
Yeah. That was perfect.
Yeah. I mean, so based on that plot, it may sound like a Mad Max movie, which it is.
Yeah.
This is one of a million and one, a million and one Italian Mad Max ripoffs.
Yeah. Mad Max came out in 79. This came out in 83.
Yeah.
So I guess more of a Road Warrior ripoff.
It is.
It definitely had a more Road Warrior feel to it, too.
Yeah. This has a lot of cars instead of some Italian movies, which are more just about post-apocalyptic wandering around.
Yeah. There's lots of customized vehicles because every group of people, like, they're very cliquish.
Yeah.
Including, it's like what their cars.
It's basically just like Italy is high school.
Yeah, this is... Mm-hmm. Well, there's not a lot of people in this movie. There is. There are not, and there are, because there are lots of groups, and each group consists of, like, maybe four people.
Yeah.
High school.
Yeah. It's like the Warriors, but each gang is, like, four people.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's funny. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about the Warriors, but it is a lot like the
Warriors. There's the Amazons. There's the Kung Fu guys.
I believe the Liu Kang squad.
The Liu Kang
squad.
Actually,
there were more Liu Kang... Liu Kangers, I guess, than any other group. There are like six of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of the hillbilly-ish looking dudes too.
There's all those the dorks and geeks, or as I like to call them, the pantyhose punks.
Yeah. The pantyhose punks, nice.
Because they wore pantyhose on their face.
Yeah. Making them all look like Luke Wilson.
Yes, that one guy definitely looked like Luke Wilson.
Yeah, so at one point, the rider has to drive through this like really half-assed barricade of a bunch of broken down Renaults and Fiats and Citroëns. And his motorcycle informs him that he's driving past the dorks, dickheads, veg outs, and geeks.
Yes.
I couldn't distinguish one group of them from the other. But they're all in there.
But there's some notables. I wrote down a few. There was Xena, warrior prostitute, Divine from the John Waters films.
Oh, yeah. She was eating fried chicken with more gusto than even Mick Jagger.
Yeah, a grown egg.
They're the wrestling rednecks.
Yeah. They love wrestling.
Yeah, there was a dwarf and there was a really gangly guy.
Yeah,
I think they were a team.
Yeah, I think so. They sex fight. They don't fight, they sex fight.
Yeah.
There's some really old guys who fight by ducking when you punch them and popping up grinning again. Yeah. Ducking again when you punch them again.
Yeah, there was a pop black lock Nazi. And drop it.
Yeah, the black Nazi. That was so weird.
I don't know why. Yeah.
Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe he was just being ironic.
There are three black people in the movie. One of them gets
electrocuted.
Yeah, electrocuted by the fascist government. Mm-hmm. One of them is a Nazi, and one of them is Fred the Hammer Williamson, who may also be a cyborg.
Also known as Henchman. That was his name in the movie.
Oh, really? Nice. Really?
Yep, that was his name. They also really did not Lando. Care about names.
Oh, and there was the last kamikaze, too, who didn't have any... His only power was staring off into the space blankly, just looking really disheartened.
So one thing that seemed really cool in the beginning when it was introduced but got annoying very quickly was the bike.
Yeah.
The bike had a personality and would talk.
It's kind of a wiseacre.
If you loved Kit from Knight Rider, you'll hate this shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you hated Navi from The Legend of Zelda, you will understand how we felt. If you know
voice,
that pain,
filtered through a whammy bar.
Hey, listen.
Yeah, everything is said three times. So if it wasn't annoying the first time, it will be by the second time, and by the third time, you will shoot yourself.
Yeah, because the first couple of times it was pretty funny because he was saying some ridiculous stuff. Yeah. And I was like, this is awesome.
It was like bad mothers, bad mothers.
And it really wouldn't be bad if they just said it one time, but every time it spoke, it had to repeat itself at least two or three times.
Yeah,
it was bite this.
It's like a parrot.
Tough.
Yeah.
Mega weapon. Mega weapon. Mega weapon.
Beep.
Yeah, the first thing it says is beep.
Yeah, which is funny.
Bop-a-loo-la.
And what kind of sucks though is that like this the sentient motorcycle is...
Its name is Einstein.
Yeah, Einstein. It carries most of the dialogue. Like, it's responsible for a lot of the dialogue.
Especially in the first, like, maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe. He just like throws out like one-liners or just like, you know, like, oh man, it's a rough day out here. Yeah.
Mostly mumbles to himself.
Yeah, and all the, by the way, the dialogue is all like well below normal speech level.
All ADR.
There are some spiders you meet at one point. The spiders are louder.
Yeah. The snake is louder.
Those spiders are cray.
The spiders make loud chirping noises.
Yeah, there was a snake that we determined was actually a land electric eel. Or
electric land eel.
Electric land eel.
Yeah, whenever a snake is tongue out, it goes zip.
Yeah. And just the one snake.
It's like John Waters in The Simpsons.
Zap. Zap.
Yeah, this...
But with no legs.
Yeah. No legs. He's legless.
Yeah.
He's legless.
Okay, so...
Legless.
Yeah, he is, you know, obviously a Mad Max figure.
Yes.
Whenever he encounters anybody, they say, please help us. And he's like, lady, I'm just trying to survive.
He's put upon. He's the put upon hero. Yes,
he is. The reluctant hero.
Yeah.
So he crashes into a wall at the beginning of the movie.
He does.
I think after being chased by a bunch of those, like, random roving gangs.
Yeah, the Omegas.
In the beginning.
The Omegas who look like Devo.
Well, the Omegas were the police force.
Yeah, that's who was chasing him in the
beginning. They were not the gangs.
No, the gangs chase him through the junkyard after he gets away
from... Oh, that's right. He was running... So it starts off where he's running away from the Omegas, then he gets away from them.
Would you like to explain that and then, running away scene from the Omegas? Because that is probably the best opening scene to any of the movies we've done.
It was pretty exciting.
Set a high bar.
Really? Yeah,
it really did.
There was a lot of action, a lot of... What the heck happened? There was a lot
was
of shooting.
Wizards.
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It was better than a still photo of some artwork from a folk album.
Yeah.
Although in the beginning, it kind of did feel like Wizards because it was like a book that you had to read.
It was a long crawl explaining that there's the Omegas and the Elders and they live in the Citadel. And then
I tuned
the
out.
Rampagers who live in the Wild Zone or something. It's very Zardoz.
And there's this hero, and his name is Max, and he's got... Oh, never mind.
There's Furiosa.
He's a little mad.
He's kind of angry.
He's
like a warrior of the roads or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, there's a beginning chase scene, and it's actually introduced, like... There's, you know, that sort of heat shot where the heat's coming off the road and
it's wavy.
They do that, but for like 30 seconds, and like you're trying to figure out what this thing is coming towards you. Mm-hmm. And it's a really badass motorcycle.
Yeah.
It's Navi, the motorcycle.
Yeah.
It looks cool, but is like really fucking annoying.
It's really annoying that it takes like 30 seconds for it to get into focus as nothing happens at the beginning of the movie. They could have done the crawl of text over that.
And that sets the scene for a lot of this movie because there's a lot of really long scenes that should be edited shorter, but weren't.
Yeah, there is a walking montage.
How long was that? We should have clocked it because it felt like it was like 15 minutes.
Yeah. The walking montage is after him and Persis Kambada, the wonderful Indian actress who was the bald lady in the Star Trek movie.
Mm-hmm.
So she's the one actress in this, I think, aside from the Amazon.
So the one actress.
Yeah. The one.
There's also the Amazon.
She's
the chicken leg eating lady. But she and him team up as soon as he gets revived by the Mon Mothmas, and they instantly infiltrate the compound of the Orwellian dictatorship.
Yeah.
They didn't even have to sneak in or anything. They just start walking around.
Everybody snuck in there. It was not even an issue.
There are no guards. It's like an open university campus.
Well, they did sneak through a very secret cave that had really loud spiders and snakes, and then
and mummies.
Unaccountably mummies. Yes. There was just a chase scene with mummies.
That led to the rafters of a weird sex club.
S&M sex club,
but
a
like
quiet S&M club.
Yeah, a quiet slow jam sex club.
Yeah.
Well, you hear in the THX-esque scenes of people standing on escalators emotionless. The voiceover says, "Work is everyone's freedom. Work must be neat and efficient. Food and entertainment are provided." And the entertainment is this sex club.
And when they're walking in, they walk into the sex club. No one notices that they're coming from the rafters, but they get down to the floor somehow. And then
people on those catwalks all the time.
And it appears that they're all dyeing eggs down there because there are all these cups that are filled with colored water. Just red and blue and green.
It's just a table full of them.
Yeah, it's like mouthwash.
It's like everyone fled from the frat party and left all their jungle juice behind.
And so people just start like indiscriminately picking up drinks and drinking them and like handing each other drinks.
And who
it
are
just
these
seems
people?
Unsafe.
There's like five people in the crowd and there's like 12 people on stage in S&M outfits moving really, really slowly.
And so mostly not moving.
Yeah, so at this point there's like three costumes. There's S&M people.
Yes.
There's the Devo Omega people.
The Omega cops.
And then there's the weird jumpsuit-y type of people.
the painters.
Who we think are like the worker bees type.
They're just like the average man of this Orwellian society.
Yeah, they're kind of like brainwashed into doing
the
work.
The men wear
gray
jumpsuits and the women wear blue jumpsuits with giant blue sashes.
Yeah.
Like some girls don't get the sash. I don't know why.
Yeah, some don't.
Yeah, I guess they just hate them.
Yeah, you know, it depends on
a status symbol in this statusless society.
That's level two.
You're allowed to choose your sash.
Yeah.
Depending on your figure.
Yeah.
If it accentuates.
Well, some people need a waist trainer and some people don't.
Yeah, man.
Some people got it.
But like the Omegas, you know, the Omegas are kind of, they basically look like, you know, Nazi Devo.
Yeah.
But they drive around in cool motorcycles or like police cruisers with spikes on the front because I guess that comes up a lot.
And the spikes are either foam or wood, we decided.
Yeah, depending on which scene they're in.
Yeah, there's the, so the guns... all make basically one sound.
Yeah.
They're like a lot of different guns.
A keytar, like, with a whammy bar on it.
Yeah. Basically, I can't recreate it. Like, with I wish I could.
It's almost like a laser going through a fart machine.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
Well, or if you ever had one of those cheap dollar store laser guns.
Yeah.
It's like it cycles through those different sounds. Like,
yeah, it's like, pew, 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 pew,
gang, gang.
Yeah, this is a world where, like, everything has a gun. Like, every vehicle has a gun. Yeah. Like, just built in. Because all the motorcycles have guns.
I'm surprised those mummies didn't have guns.
I know.
That's actually a good
point.
They
never went into... So there are mummies in this movie, but they never go into who they are or why they're there.
Or what's going on. They're not even like real mummies. They kind of have like these weird creature faces.
It seemed like one of those movies that's like cut together from several episodes of an adventure serial.
Because it's like Land of the Lost or something.
You would almost think that the mummies were the rejects, but we see a scene where we see how they handle the people who fail out of their society because they
found to be inefficient.
Yes. So they're inefficient.
By the way, I think the real torture... I would much rather be executed because the real torture before that scene is the walking montage. It must take 5 minutes.
Yeah, they just passed about 25 guard towers.
Yeah, it was a 5-day journey to walk where they walked.
Yeah. So like all of the scenes in the Orwellian society are filmed on what looks like the world's biggest brutalist college campus slash parking garage.
Yes.
It's really cool architecture.
Yeah,
it's really
cool.
Figure out where
a really
it was
cool building.
It must be some like large, you know, office park or something that was built in the 70s, but I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, maybe it was the World Cup or something.
Maybe those don't do anything anymore.
Yeah. And then there's also the scenes filmed in the abandoned building that looked like where they filmed that scene in Children of Men where they go around from
where the
room to room to room to room for about 10 minutes.
So yeah, which also, because of the shaky cam in Children of Men, there was a lot of shaky cam in this, which was actually kind of cool.
More than expected in the 80s.
Yeah,
definitely.
For 1983, I don't know. This might be a pioneer.
I have a feeling that was a budgetary call.
Happy accidents.
Yeah, but it definitely worked out. Like, it made some of like the running and gunning scenes, which are just, there's so many of them. It made the few that did have that effect really cool.
Yeah, but it felt a little bit more modern, like, which is kind of cool.
The scene where they infiltrate the place, I didn't even mention this. He goes in with this woman, who is basically the same woman she plays in Megaforce, which is the princess, and her father is the professor, who is like the expert on freedom or something.
The leader.
Yeah.
The professor, I think they call him.
Yeah. She's just a professor. And then the rider goes in with her to rescue her father. And they leave in a helicopter and then they leave her behind.
Yeah. Well, she gets shot and instead of like just grabbing her, he just slowly starts lifting away.
Yeah.
He was almost taunting her. She was reaching for him with her hand.
Like,
he was 6 inches away.
I'm pretty sure he could have jumped out, got her, threw her in, and then jumped back into the helicopter.
Yeah. I mean, these Omega guys, I mean, they go down like, in that first breakout, they must kill like 400 of them.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
These guys are the stormtroopers of all stormtroopers.
They are.
Yeah,
they're super inaccurate.
I mean,
they can shoot so much worse than random people who just grab their guns from them.
They frequently shoot themselves and their friends.
They're sort of
a circular firing squad at one point.
We're sort of led to believe that the building that this movement or whatever the government is headquartered in, the Citadel, is just lined with all sorts of like Omega cops, right?
Yeah.
And there's a team when the warriors finally team up and stop like having their infights. They come together, like two from each tribe or group, six people go into this building that's full of like hundreds, if not thousands of people for this cause, like the Omega cops and like all the worker bees.
Yeah, it was like two Amazons infiltrating
and
two kung fu guys and like two of the weird looking Italian rednecks.
Yeah, and within like maybe 5 minutes, less time that it takes to walk across the campus. Yes. they have defeated them. They've brought them out.
Yeah,
yeah. This is the easiest
two people
uprising
or three
ever.
People. It was ridiculous.
This is like a more of a rout than the Zulu War.
Yeah. By the way, that was like the climax. Like that was like they tore down all of like the Omega
the Omega banner.
Yeah, the Omega banner. Like that was their big climax. It was the so anticlimactic.
They don't have any particular strategy or idea for how to defeat the Omegas.
Well,
they just rely on the Omegas all being incompetent.
To be fair,
yeah,
Liu
true.
Kangs.
Yeah,
and they had to travel together. They only fight in tandem. It's like a side scroller. If they get too far ahead of the other one, they can't go any
like
farther.
Two were military dudes. Two were like roughnecks.
Right. That's why they're called the geeks and the dorks and the veg outs. It's like River City Ransom.
Yeah.
None of them bark.
The screen can only go as far as the lead guy.
Yeah, that's right. That's probably why they
if
did that.
If that guy in the back's holding it up, you can't advance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Man. That's a
that's
tough
why
game.
The Amazons were in front.
Yeah.
They would have held up everybody else otherwise.
That's true. But we should probably backtrack to the beginning when we were talking about the initial chase scene that made us super excited.
It introduces us to the original Omega Cops.
Yes, the original Omega Cops.
With a cool little
coming soon.
Guitar like soundtrack going on in the background.
Yeah, we realized that the soundtrack was going to be interesting. Yeah. That's basically it. That is better quality than in the movie.
Yeah.
Etc.
Yeah. So there's this
explosions,
big chase. Chase scene. He's being chased by two motorcycle cops and the one police vehicle or Omega vehicle had like spikes down the front and had an awesome spoiler. Mm-hmm. Like I really wish there were some skater kids to do
tricks.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The police vehicles all have spoilers.
It was
on
like
them.
A half pipe.
Yeah, it was like a quarter pipe on the thing.
The spoiler doesn't have like a big hole in the middle of it like a normal spoiler does. It's just a ramp.
Well these cars go super fast, right? They What was it, like high velocity? Is that
Something
maximum.
Like that.
I think it was ultimate
maximum
velocity.
Yeah.
No, maximum pursuit, ultimate velocity.
Ultimate
that's
velocity.
Those are the names of the two cops, by the way.
Yeah. So there is a really awesome car explosion. There are multiple
just
car explosions.
There's multiple
there's
cool
three.
Things going on.
I think
on.
It was the same one filmed from three different angles.
It could have been.
There was at least two, because one of them fell into the water.
Yeah, that last one wasn't.
But they're all filmed at this quarry, I guess, where there's this incredibly polluted reservoir of bluish greenish water there.
It's full
it
of car parts.
It wasn't polluted before, it is now.
Full of parts.
Yeah, every car explosion happened over the same reservoir. And we're pretty sure that two of the scenes were just different angles of the same
vehicle.
Which is
pretty ingenious. It's not bad idea.
No.
You know, if you got a small budget, why not?
Yeah, because it was kind of cool for a car explosion.
And the explosion was awesome.
I mean, like, it was they clearly put like a bunch of explosives inside, like not just like a bunch of gasoline to have it burn. Like, it was an energetic explosion.
Yeah, it explodes when it gets like 5% of the way down the hill, too.
Yeah. Like, like the explosion's so crazy that it propels like parts of the car off.
Yeah, see, I think that's the giveaway because, like, in all three of the explosions, like, let's say the car is driving forward, like, at 12 o'clock, there's some giant thing flies off right at like 10 o'clock.
Yeah, it looked like a fender or a door or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes flying like easily like 30, 40 feet away from the car.
For sure.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah,
the pyrotechnic guy on this movie had a fucking blast.
Yeah. There are so many wastelands in Italy.
Yeah.
The one thing that I had a question about is there's a part in the beginning where he's going through like this yard of cars after the geeks and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And this is supposed to be like a post-apocalyptic like world, and like the yard of cars, like the cars are really neatly sort of placed, and the grass is cut really short. Like,
you're right.
Like this must have been like right after the apocalypse.
Yeah,
like right.
Yeah.
Like
it's a transition period.
Yeah.
Hey, just because they're feral humans doesn't mean that you know they don't care about their yard.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe the Omega people took over, and that's
this is like year one post-apocalypse.
Yeah.
One.
You know how many goats there are in the post-apocalypse in Italy, and how much
so
goats
many.
Love to
oh,
eat grass.
That's true.
Wherever
there
they
probably
go.
Could just be goats roaming around.
Yeah. Before we leave the beginning scene, there was that cool scene where he's chasing the bike, and the bike shoots guns from the rear of the motorcycle.
Yeah.
And it kills a guy.
Yeah.
And that explodes, and then there's another guy that just gets scared and stops moving. And then the car comes up behind that guy and nails him. Now, the cool thing about this is the whole front end of the bumper kind of breaks off, and this is where we notice that the spikes are kind of foamy.
Yeah.
But then the guy's head falls off.
Yeah, pops right
like,
off.
Just straight pops off.
Yeah.
And there's like a neck, like
something's
spine
hanging
thing
from the head.
Hanging.
Yeah,
it's like in Mortal Kombat, whichever guy it was that rips out the spinal column.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, that was good.
Yeah, just seeing like a spinal column roll from like a disembodied head.
Immediately after that head pops off, there's a car explosion. Yeah. So it's pretty great.
And before that was the motorcycle explosion, where afterwards you see an entire body in flames sitting in
slow
at
motion.
The motorcycle's steering wheel. I think that was just a dummy. It looked like it was made of cloth and rags.
Yeah.
It was made of human.
Yeah.
It was pretty much the most badass 30 seconds of this whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're in the beginning, after that whole weird chase scene, there's a scene that I don't quite understand. He's letting the motorcycle do like autopilot shit.
Yeah.
Like, it drives itself, I guess. And it drives itself right into the side of a cliff.
That's right.
A
very similar cliff to the one that all those cars are driving off of, except it didn't have a bunch of water at the bottom.
Yeah, and then so he's dead, right? No.
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 He wakes
the bike's
up.
Exploded, right?
Yeah.
You would think.
Maybe.
But it just turned into gray smoke.
Yeah. So he wakes up on an altar in a white room.
Yeah.
Surrounded.
It's curtains. almost like Bill and Ted the Future.
Yeah.
Everyone's just wearing weird costumes.
Yeah, everyone's got togas on.
Yeah, he's surrounded by like people in togas, like, and they're old people showing like shoulder too. So it's a little bit some old people skin going on there.
Yeah. Little did he know that when he crashed into that wall, he was going through platform 9 3/4 at King's Cross Station.
Yeah.
And it takes him through a wormhole. To the land of the Mon Mothmas.
I started trying to build a case that this movie was basically just a Zelda movie.
Okay, yeah.
And then I realized that it kind of petered out, but these are the three things.
Well, there's a Triforce.
There's a Triforce. Four things. There's a Triforce. Triangles are a thing.
Yes.
They believe in threes. They believe in the rule threes there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's a Triforce. There's Navi. There's Magic Sage Elders.
Yeah. Ooh.
And there's a princess in a castle.
Damn.
One machine in a castle.
I'm considering the Citadel Castle.
Yeah, it's metaphorical.
Yeah.
And one of the old people in white robes, at one point, they're like trying to commune with the rider and like bring him back to health by staring at his wounds.
Oh yeah.
They flash lights from their sleeves and that heals them.
Yeah. At this point, I thought the movie was going to be a lot, kind of Zardoz-ish, but they don't really see these elders ever again.
Yeah.
No, they don't matter.
So at this point, one of them starts floating gradually. Levitating?
Yeah, he pops a high one.
Yeah,
he pops a real high one.
Like, he goes like 3 inches off the ground in his intently attempt to heal the guy. And then he's standing next to Fred Williamson. And Fred Williamson just gives him a look like, not now.
Calm down.
Not down.
I think he puts his hand on his shoulder and pulls him down
to the ground.
Brings him back there.
It's not that exciting, guy.
Yeah.
You're just bringing this guy back to life.
Yeah, chill out,
it's not
dude.
That exciting.
And that was the only levitation in the movie.
Yeah, it was never brought up again, or even why that happened.
No. Much like time travel in Frenchman's Farm.
Yeah.
I would have expected more levitation once I saw that.
So after this, he just pops up in the field. With
he's got the costume on, and he's in it.
With the henchman.
He's got his bike back.
Yeah, the henchman just explains, like, hey, you were chosen, so there you go.
Fred the henchman Williamson.
Yeah.
And then the princess lady goes, hey, you got to do this, and then he goes, I don't want to, and then she sticks a gun in his crotch.
Then they infiltrate the whole place, and they swap her for her father, and I liked her father.
In
this
between
guy,
there are mummies and snakes and whatnot. And
a mini this guy cycled between looking like Gary Busey, looking like John Denver, looking like Jimmy Carter, and looking like Kane, the evil preacher guy from Poltergeist 2.
Yeah.
He looks like all those skinny older men.
But before they got to him, they had to go through that cave, right?
The creepy cave.
With the mummies,
Yeah, and then so the cave had three levels. The first level was loud spiders, loud tarantulas. Oh, was it bats?
There's
so four. So there's the
Zubats.
The bats.
Cave.
There were the web spinning tarantulas.
Yes. That sounded like squeaky mice.
The electric landials.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wiggy wiggy wiggy.
And then there are the mummies.
Who look like sloth and
so
cloth.
Here's,
the sloths from the Mummy Lagoon.
Yeah.
And how the mummies get resolved is that they're cornered, right? They're cornered, and then up the rider's sleeve. Like the rider reaches his sleeve. And pulls out like this sonic screwdriver or like pen or
it's
something.
A pen.
But it's a flamethrower.
Yeah.
And it's a powerful flamethrower that's just like handheld.
It is.
No idea where he got it.
Yeah.
He was in a crash and with like elders.
Yeah.
No one gave him anything.
He literally goes, I hope this works.
He doesn't know what it is.
They clearly cut out the scene where the Q elder gives him a bunch of gadgets.
Yeah.
And he says, only use each of these once and then throw it away.
Yeah.
Because he uses it once, it works, and then he drops it like a hot mic.
Yeah, all the weapons are ethereal. So you can't repair them.
Yeah.
Like you can't
again,
once they've lost all of their their juice or gone.
Again, like a video game.
Yes.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah,
because
after
stage
that,
two.
They were rehearsing Satan's Alley in there all day.
World two.
Very few customers drinking all those colorful little tiny cups.
Yeah. World two, level one.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so then after he escapes with Gary Busey / Jimmy Carter, etc., the professor / father, there's this really long scene where all these members of these different gangs are fighting with each other for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
It's just showing off different fighting styles, and then he manages to step in with like 10 seconds left in the whole thing, and he becomes the winner.
Yeah,
well,
it's so weird.
Jimmy Carter explains that these people, meaning the warriors, don't know like they know a very simple way of surviving. Yeah. Like their understanding of surviving is very because I guess they've spent so long just trying to live that all they know is fighting. So it kind of looks like they're having some sort of like G8 type meeting because like they all circle, they all have their champions that like come into the circle and then the ninja starts to bow as like a show of respect and an Amazon kicks them right in the gut.
Yeah.
And then they start this brawl like so full on.
Yeah, so they're basically like negotiating, but like 10% of the negotiating is gestures and 90% is fighting.
Yeah, it's weird because it's not like they... there's obviously rules to it because there's only two in each one.
Yeah, they warmed up too.
Yeah, but there's only two in each one. Like no one else from the other like join in or anything. It's not, you know.
And for some reason, the writer and Jimmy Carter are off on the side and no one's noticed that they're around.
Yeah, they pull up in a pretty loud car, I believe.
Yeah. For a post-apocalyptic.
No, they pull up in a helicopter. Yeah. They land a helicopter near this G8 summit.
Stealth-a-copter.
I mean, if you can't protest like 10 miles outside of a G8 summit, they just landed a helicopter in it.
I mean, the Mad Max movies are extremely realistic in that when they depict this chaotic society, whenever a stranger appears, he is viewed with extreme suspicion.
Yeah, and there's logic to that.
Yeah, and they say, you know, who is this guy? We should probably take him captive until we figure out who he is.
Exactly.
Whereas in Warrior of the Lost World, people can just go anywhere they want and just join in with whatever anybody else is doing.
Unless you're the Omega Cop.
Yeah,
Omega
guys. You guys punching people in the face? I'm down.
There is zero vetting process in this world. They have lost it. But after the apocalypse,
they don't check IDs.
No one checks references. Just so
there's
you
no
know.
No references. You don't need to bring a resume, no photo IDs.
Just come hang out, man.
It's like the Wild West.
And have a pre-planned persona. Like, you know, I think I want to be with the ninjas, man. Like, oh, well, you need to make sure you have a red headband
and know how to
kick.
Shirt.
No shirt.
So I guess this guy was surprised. This guy shows up wearing a leather jacket on a motorcycle. That's a classic look, but he doesn't find anybody else who is like that, and I think he's a little disappointed by
that. Well, he's different.
He wanted to join the hoods.
Yeah. He's a loner, Dottie.
Well, actually, the bad dude, Prosser, turns out to be a leather jacket guy too at the end.
Yeah,
Donald Pleasance.
Yeah,
Donald Halloween Pleasance.
Yeah,
/ Dr. Evil.
Yeah, because the cover of this VHS is great because it lists the actors and then it lists their credits in the style of nicknames. It says Donald and then in quotes Halloween Pleasance.
Yeah, that's great.
Persis end quotes Star Trek Kambada.
Yeah,
and the worst thing is that Fred Williamson isn't even on there, and he is often listed as Fred the Hammer Williamson.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the one who actually has
a nickname.
No one's like, hey, Donald. The Halloween Loomis.
Yeah, well, you know,
Dr. Loomis.
Yeah, Halloweeny.
Yeah, well, he changed his name to Halloween for a brief period. When he was trying to start
like
a spin-off rap career. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Prosser guy, he's a really interesting character in
that. Yeah, because he has a glove.
He had a glove that was never explained.
A limp that is for no reason, apparently.
Yeah.
No glove, no love, to quote Donald Halloween Pleasance.
Yeah. He looked like Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he looked like Blofeld because he was Blofeld, and Dr. Evil was modeled on Blofeld.
There you go.
Yeah, he look like him.
Well, even the outfit, though. Like, the clothing, the collar and everything was Dr. Evil.
Yeah,
exactly. All he was missing was, like, a big white cat.
Yeah, instead of a cat, he has a big black glove on one hand.
Yeah.
That, like, always things clinged to his, like, inside, grabbing his boob or something.
Unless he was slapping someone.
He was pulling a Napoleon. He was just holding his hand over his chest at all times.
Pulling a Napoleon.
Yeah.
Which was kind of disappointing. I really wanted to see what was under that glove.
There must have been something gnarly, right?
Yeah. Like, was it deformed? Was it just like
another glove?
A sensual glove?
Like, did he survive future polio?
He only takes the glove off for the ones he loves.
No glove, no love. Yeah. Do you think that the glove was like really think it made his hand like have extra punching power? Was it like a strong glove?
He's got a weighted glove.
Was he a robot? Yeah. Was he have a robot hand? Like, what's her name?
Dr. Claw.
Do you think OJ could get his hand in that glove?
Yes.
What? I don't think so.
Furiosa?
I was going to say, do you think OJ could get his hand in that glove?
I don't think so.
That was like a really big glove. Donald Pleasance is a small man, so it's hard to tell. OJ probably has really big hands because, you know, it's important for being a football player, especially a running back.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We digress.
Yes.
Speaking of digressing, let's go back to the fight scene and point out that one guy runs at the camera, punching as hard as possible. He probably punches like 20 times in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And he punches the air so fast that it sounds like when you're driving and you have your back windows open, but not the front windows open.
Oh, man, that is such a great...
That guy is just like Mac from It's Always Sunny, just like showing off sweet karate moves to like no one.
Yep. He was doing it a lot faster than Mac.
Yeah.
Or the film was sped up.
Well, hey, you got to be really fast to be in like the Liu Kang gang.
Yeah.
That guy wasn't in the Liu Kang gang. He was one of the Italian rednecks.
No, he was not the Liu Kang gang. He was a Liu Kanger.
Okay, sure.
He was a Kanger.
He was burly.
The whole sound effects for the fighting was actually really interesting.
Yeah.
It was really loud, and it was like the same seven or eight sounds just like cycled through.
Yeah.
Like I feel like there was like a drum board or something.
Yeah, it was like programmed in.
Douche, douche. Do-do-do-do-do-do. It's just like these random shitty sounds.
When you went drink.
It gets really loud.
Yeah, so where were we? Persis Kambata has been kidnapped. And Donald Pleasant straps her to a white plastic light box.
Diddy Kong.
Diddy Kong.
And he starts using the anti-mine, the anti-mine 114 on
her. What's with this 114? Yeah, it showed up on the anti-mine.
Yeah, the electrical Terminator. Execution device was called the Terminator 114.
Yeah, the Terminator X. it was the
It was Terminator 114, but there was no vowels.
Yeah, and then the mind control device is called the Flavor Flav 114.
Yeah.
It had neck control.
It has three options that you can push. Like it's a remote control. It's like for an RC car, basically. Three options, negative conditioning, avoidance, and control.
And then he
activates
like
all of those, and she
there.
Gets super brainwashed.
She sounds like a cat.
Yeah. She sounds like Ashley Schaefer, Will Ferrell from Eastbound and Down. Woo! 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 Those are the exact sounds she makes.
You see, my dear, the real world isn't a very nice place. When I'm finished with you, you will be attached to a machine which will draw its energy from your body.
And the brainwashing soundtrack is just like sped up dolphin noises, like put through a synthesizer or something.
Yeah, it's like the Weddell seal sounds you hear in that Werner Herzog movie about the South Pole. Like just when they bounce their sound waves off the ice, it makes really weird, bouncy, whoopy noises.
It's very specific.
And apparently, in the future, part of being efficient is using as few vowels as possible.
Yeah.
So all of like the little controller with a dial for the mind control, like I just said, like what was it? Neg.
It was neg condition, but neg it was C O N D N. I think.
Yeah.
Avoidance is abbreviated by removing several of the vowels, and then control is abbreviated too. Even they could have fit the whole word control on there.
Yeah.
It's only seven.
Neg conditioning was way longer.
Yeah.
It's just weird because there's no like rhyme or reason to it. It's like sometimes there's an O, sometimes there isn't. Yeah. Like at first I was like, oh, maybe they just don't have vowels.
We're just not efficient enough to understand.
I guess
not.
That's probably it.
Yeah, we're just lucky that thing was in English instead of Italian.
So the writer had a special ability that I don't think they really even discussed in the movie, but was very apparent.
Oh yeah,
where he could he actually drew all gunshots to his shoulders.
Yeah, he had bullet magnets on his shoulders.
He kept getting shot, and every time they would show the same like wound in his leather jacket on his shoulder.
I don't think he has. I think he still gets wounded, but he just is able to draw all of those bullets up.
Like they're shooting him in the head.
Yeah.
But his shoulder magnets are just like, come over here. And he gets shot in the bullet.
Yeah. Like Nastasia.
That's right. A magnet powerful enough would attract bullets, I guess.
Nastasia had her. She had a gun pointed at his balls at one point.
Yeah. Well, that's her name, Nastasia.
Sure even if she fired it, it probably would have gone to
his
shoulder.
It hurts so much. Point blank to his crotch.
Yeah. It was dug in there, too.
It might penetrate his skin, but not all the way through.
Yeah, it's taken a right angle right up to the shoulder.
Yep, gets flattened right up.
So as soon as Jimmy Carter gives this really uninspiring speech, they overtake the compound. And then the
professor,
Jimmy Carter is in a helicopter the whole time.
The professor is a philosophy professor. Yeah.
He's also the world's worst speaker.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah, well, I looked up actor Harrison Mueller here, and he has been in three movies.
Too many.
And he was a professional dancer.
Oh.
For several decades.
Maybe he choreographed the SMN scene.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, so this guy, I searched for his name, and I find all these references to how great he was as a dancer.
Well,
clearly not as an actor.
Yeah.
No.
He's really skinny. I'll give him that.
He does
look like a machine as Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, he had two modes. The one where he was preachy and like weirdly happy, like smiley, but like not.
Yeah, he smiled a lot.
Like almost disconcertingly so.
Like he was up on some sort of drug.
It was
disconcerting
because he's so skinny that when he smiled, it's like his skin is stretched over his face.
Yeah, he was very much like
a poltergeist too.
You can see a skull.
Yeah.
Like a skeleton with just skin draped over it.
Yeah. I didn't know if he was like, it almost seemed like he was like from some weird cult. You know, he had that weird happiness to him.
Jimmy Jones kind of
feel.
Like guys are shooting at him. He's just like, hey, everybody, I want to tell you about the new way.
Yeah.
It's a really good way.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Yes, there you go. Yeah.
How did they get all those berets? As soon as they became like a revolutionary force, they all started wearing berets.
I think those are all just tucked underneath the helicopter
seats.
Probably. It's like, oh, you're in a helicopter. You got to put
the beret
on.
It's with like your emergency, like all your emergency
stuff. That helicopter was left over from beret. Yeah, the helicopter was left over from pre-apocalyptic Italy, and all their soldiers wear berets. So they just had a helicopter stuffed with them, and that's the one they use.
Yeah,
that's,
and, that works for me.
Jimmy Carter, professor, when he's not weirdly happy, he's angry, and his anger comes out in just monotone deadpanness.
Yeah, his speech at the end where he tells Donald Pleasance how evil he is the worst speech I've heard in
a
while.
It's awful.
It's painful to listen to.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, he just watched his daughter almost kill him, and he's talking to the man who's created this post-apocalyptic world where everybody suffers, and he can't bring it to himself because he's so happy and peaceful, I guess.
He says,
I don't hate you.
Yeah, I don't hate you. I just think your brand of evil is destructive to humanity. Yeah.
That's
my
too
brand
much
of
emotion.
Evil is hilarious.
Yeah. He's actually talking about your brand of evil as if there was a better brand of evil that he could just as easily be using.
Of course. The lesser of two evils.
Absolutely. No system is ever without flaws. But your brand of evil is an abomination. Stripping people of their rights to be different, to be human beings, individuals. Your brand of evil has to be fought to the death. We're well rid of you.
Well said.
Yeah, I don't understand what, like, there's sometimes where they're clearly speaking into, like, all the mics and the dialogue in this movie. Sometimes the dialogue is, like, so quiet you have to, like, lean up to the TV to hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
And then you go to see them spiders and the spider's just like...
And then the guy's punching air and it's louder than everything.
Yeah, punching air is louder than most of the dialogue.
Yeah, I would think that since everything's, like, dubbed, like, everything's, like, all the dialogue is, like, ADR. There's
all,
none,
like,
of it.
Patched in.
Yeah, I don't think they had any, like, even, like, booms, like sound booms.
No.
I don't think they
didn't
pick up sound on set.
That just complicates things.
But it just, I didn't know that, like, that sound, like, dialogue could be, like, fuzzy. But it was, like, it was very quiet and also very fuzzy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, it was hard to, like, decipher it. But, like, it was almost like they just had the one take to do the ADR. And
they had one take for the ADR.
They had a time constraint.
Yeah.
The guy was there for 5 hours and he wasn't coming back. And this is what he could get
done. Italian movies had a grand tradition of dubbing and then releasing in different languages and having actors who couldn't even talk to each other because half of them were Italian and half were American.
Yeah, because most of these actors were Italian.
Yeah. Because there was some
of
it that was just,
like, the gang members.
Some of it was just straight dubbed. Like, they weren't speaking English.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This was directed by a guy named David Wirth. It wasn't by an Italian director, a little surprisingly.
No.
So he started out with several porn movies in the 70s. He made Bloodsport.
Damn.
He made Bloodsport.
Awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. His
career
definitely peaked with Bloodsport.
Damn. Wow. Damn, remember in Bloodsport when he split that dude's shin open?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
No, wait, I'm sorry. He directed Kickboxer. He was the cinematographer for Bloodsport.
Oh, come on.
You know what?
Get out of here.
The poor man's Bloodsport.
I mean, Kickboxer was all
Kickboxer
right.
Kickboxer was good, but it was no Bloodsport.
God damn it.
Yeah, he also made Shark Attack 3 Megalodon. That's a classic bad movie.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a scene. This goes into the rule of threes that happens in this Omegaland.
Omegaland. The Triforce.
Yeah, this is after the 5 minute walk scene. They're being walked to see these people be disposed of, see these inefficient people be disposed of in the society. And it's just this weird death triangle that's in the middle of, like, a weird like Colosseum.
And they all look
thing.
At each other, like, they make them look.
Yeah,
at
they make
each
them
other.
All look at each other, and everybody in the audience seems bored as
they're
fuck.
They're so bemused.
Yeah,
they're not even upset. They're mostly bored.
At first, I thought maybe it was like a deterrent, like they were bad dudes too, and they were like, "Don't mess up anymore, or you'll get this."
Yeah.
But then they were like, "You guys are efficient. Yeah. You guys are good."
Yeah.
Good
so that,
job,
yeah.
Guys.
It's almost like a privilege to watch this.
So it's like,
are you not entertained?
So,
says Russell Crowe Jr.
So they get onto this, like, metal triangular pad that's in the middle of this dirt
and they get
floor.
They get handcuffed to triangles.
Yeah, they get handcuffed to triangles, these triangle posts, and they're all facing each other. And there's a lot of diversity in this scene because there's a white dude, there's an Asian woman, and there's a black dude.
Yeah.
Who are all being executed.
Yeah, for inefficiency.
For inefficiency.
And then they kill them in the most inefficient way ever.
And what's funny is, like, the death scene, like, where they're all, like, shaking and pretending to be electrocuted, they don't show that. Like, they show it a little bit, but
it's
mostly
guy shaking.
They show it from behind with just their hands.
Yeah, it's like a lot of hand movement. Yeah. And then you see I think the Asian girl is the only one Mm-hmm. Where they actually show her face and her, it looks like she just like smelled something bad.
Yeah,
like, it's not like she's getting electrocuted.
Yeah,
it's
the black dude actually just looks like he's in like one of those massage chairs, like the belt, like the
pretty much what it was. It was strapped in, and the thing was definitely shaking.
Yeah,
yeah, but yeah, so that happens, and it's a boring scene for everybody, even the people in the scene.
Yeah.
What's awesome is like they all die at the same time. They all fall down like very neatly in this like triangle.
Yeah, each falls like
simultaneously
30 degrees to the right.
Yeah.
They torch them immediately after, and those bodies are flammable.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, instantly. I guess that's what happens when.
Yeah, they're like those starter logs.
Yeah, they are.
So like, if you don't burn the bodies, they become like mummies in stage one.
Yeah. Like they were in world one, stage four.
Yeah. Oh, my mistake.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so all this stuff in the fascist landscape just amounts to nothing because the Omega Cops can be just easily, you grab the weapon, you shoot 50 of them with it, then you run
away. They're tiny Tommy guns.
tiny laser fart
tiny
guns.
Tiny Tommies.
Yeah, fart lasers. Yeah, and then let's just jump to the mega weapon, okay?
Let's do it.
Mega weapon.
There's a mega weapon.
There's a mega weapon.
There's a pretty cool chase scene that leads up to the mega weapon.
Actually, yeah, that's worth mentioning because it's basically like an episode of Real Life Wacky Races. Where it's just like the Arkansas Chug-a-Bug. You get all the classics are in there.
Yeah, and eventually the good guys, I guess.
I don't think they have a name for the good guys.
They basically steal one of like every vehicle of the bad dudes.
Yeah, so aren't they
mobile,
the warriors?
There's the vehicle with no cars, doors.
Yeah.
There's the motorcycle. There's the helicopter. They basically come up on some people, steal their car, and then just proceed forward.
Yeah.
But then
helicopter joins them.
Yeah.
At some point.
But then the road is blocked by, to quote Einstein, the motorcycle.
Mega weapon, mega weapon, mega weapon. Yeah.
No, what do they say? He asked them if it can be defeated. And he said, no.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah,
tough,
yeah. Like, tough.
No chance
or something.
Or
how do I defeat this?
Got me.
Tough luck.
So what the hell is that thing? Fun rabbit. How's it take to knock it out?
20 megatons.
What's the vulnerability?
Sign her.
What do you expect me to do?
Got me.
What's our outside chance?
Computer terminal island.
That's a great place for it.
But then he tells it how to defeat it, and the way to defeat it is to get underneath it and disconnect some wires.
And when they first...
40 megatons.
When the mega weapon first appears, it looks menacing. Because it has, like, all of these flamethrowers on the front and, a lot of spikes.
It looks like there's probably guns. Triangle of spikes. Yeah, it looks like there's probably guns.
Yeah.
But I don't think it shoots any guns.
Butter. Just the
bullets.
So the rider just... totally eats it under this mega weapon that's moving so slowly.
Yeah, the thing is moving like 5 miles an hour.
Like, I could walk faster than this thing's moving.
He has to sacrifice his talking motorcycle to get underneath it. Or he could have just laid down and waited for it to roll over.
Exactly. The clearance is like 2 feet on this thing. He could have just laid there and just waited to get under
it. He could just ran up on it.
Yeah, he could have just like walked up to it.
Yeah.
It had laid no down. Like side weapons or anything.
Was it not even driving the mega weapon?
Or was
it
autonomous?
I don't know.
Who knows?
Was the mega weapon really a threat to anything?
Well, what was it?
To drive around it.
They seriously could have just driven around it. That thing looked like at a turn radius of like 1,000 feet. Like, there was no way that was making a U-turn.
Like a World War II tank.
The funniest part, though, is that you only see it from the front when like it's coming on, and even when he's fiddling with it, like underneath, he's like cutting all the wires and stuff to make it, you know, just
zap out.
Give it 40 megatons.
Yeah, yeah. He makes it send flamethrower blasts in random directions.
Well, they pan out
it.
And they finally show the whole thing from like the side, and it's just a fucking dump truck.
Yeah,
like it's not even.
Yeah, when it drives
show
through
the
a
whole
ditch
thing.
On the side
it's
of the
just
road.
A, it's a dump truck painted
dump
flat,
truck.
Matte black.
Well, everything in every vehicle in this entire movie is painted matte black.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it
yeah, and then out of nowhere, the mega weapon kind of craps out, and then it just pulls to the side, and then everyone's just like, yay, and then they go past it, and it blows up out of nowhere.
They drive past it, and then the helicopter takes off with all the vehicles and picks up the rider, since he doesn't have a vehicle anymore, and then when he's taking off, it just explodes as he's flying away.
So weird.
Yeah.
All right, now, was anybody sad when the bike died?
I was ready.
I was ready for it to die. Like,
okay.
After he was fixing it the first time, when he went through like the illusion wall of illusion.
Yeah.
I was really hoping it was dead the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was obviously dazed because it appeared on the screen, the message, "What wall, man?"
Yeah.
Well, it had a tune.
Yeah, because they definitely played up the thing of, like, it was hurting. Like, the robot could feel.
Oh, yeah, when it was being run over, love, it did a whole, like, it even blinked out, and it was like, tough. Got me.
Yeah. It was very sad.
I think but, this robot is so stupid. It doesn't have the voice of Mr. Feeny. Yeah. I didn't miss it when it was gone.
I felt no remorse.
The one thing I did like about this robot was there's a scene before they get to the mega weapon where the Omegas have set up a roadblock. And
yeah, with their two spiky cars.
Yeah, because I guess pointed that's all at each other. Yeah. It didn't even make sense.
Yeah.
They decided to just, like, you know, make a roadblock and. The gladiator decides he's gonna, like, he's like, how do I get past this roadblock? And he asks, he asks this stupid goddamn motorcycle how he does it, and it, like, jumps over the somehow it jumps over the roadblock.
It develops jumping powers,
And then he asks, like, how did you do that? And it just gives him a message on screen that, Mike, would you like to read that? Because it's, pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, his answer, the answer was E equals MC2 186,000 my per sec 2342. Dragon pi R2 equals never 12% at 143 light years 23 27 69 71 x 5 0s 3 7s om equals e toti x dwg 2001 eg etc.
We pause the tape.
Yeah, so we can get that down.
No, Mike is really, really good.
And then
Mike's a savant.
Yep.
Yeah, and then our hero, the road warrior, if you will, says, like, "Knock it off, boy."
Yeah. You
know, I'm not entertained.
I don't like good your one. Sass.
Redonkulous.
Yeah.
And
so,
then he kills him.
So this this is another movie that we watched that doesn't actually resolve at all. Like, nothing changes.
No. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because what happens is they do end up killing the Prosser, right?
All pleasant.
Dr. Evil.
Because after Nastasia is brainwashed, the writer that's and the professor come up to the Prosser's his office, his lair.
Yeah, his office, so which has this weird sculpture in it.
Yeah.
Like C-3PO done by Giacometti.
Yeah, he was like like he was ran over by, like, a asphalt roller.
Yeah.
It almost looks like a sculpture that Lydia Dietz's stepmom would have come up with.
The only person laughing is Daryl, and you can't hear him laughing. I don't know what that's a reference to.
No, that's a reference to my gosh, Beetlejuice.
Oh, that's what her name was. Yeah.
But so anyway, so they confront the Prosser in the big climax, after the banner's being torn down, he's been defeated.
Freedom forever,
the Prosser's been defeated, and he knows it.
Now with Halloween,
but he's in his office with the brainwashed princess lady, who is pointing a gun at her own head because her brain has been so mightily washed.
And it's been clockwork orange.
They do a really good reveal on that too, because they do this whole conversation, and they're like, "Well, where is Nastasia? Give us Nastasia." And he's like, "Oh." Nastasia, and then his office chair has been turned around the whole time. Yeah. Then he turns it around, and there she is with a gun to her head.
Yeah, and then he leans over her in this, like, really glamour shot satisfied looking way.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
He's in the
really creepy Willy Wonka gift. Like, tell me how entertained I am.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Condescending pleasance.
Yeah. Yes.
But then then they shoot him in the head somehow, and then they just leave him there to rot.
Well, she shoots him because he tells Nastasia, "Kill your father, kill these people."
She walks up like she's going to, and
takes her time.
She shoots the road warrior, but of course his shoulder magnets.
His shoulder magnets.
Yeah, right, he's like, "I've been wounded there before."
Yeah, no biggie.
Shot to the shoulder, no big deal.
Yeah. So
and then you think that, like, maybe the dad's gonna be like, "Don't shoot me, I'm your father."
Just stands
like
there.
Try to break the brainwash.
He just sits there and smiles like a fucking creep.
Yeah. Instead, she just, like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, just turns around and shoots Dr. Evil, like, in the chest a bunch, and then shoots him in the head.
So is this because, like, is this, like, ironic because he brainwashed her to see him as her father, maybe?
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I just thought
she had a lot of daddy issues.
I have no clue.
Like, I don't know.
I was just lost.
Or did she break out of her brainwash hold? And
I think she broke out of her brainwash.
She did. She was fighting. She was taking a long time. I think she was, they're supposed to be, like, an internal struggle. She's just not that good of an actress.
She didn't get negged enough.
No, she's not enough negging. Oh, but I will say one thing about the professor's smile. If you listen to the Airborne episode, we talked about how the main character in that movie, he had this, like, constant smile that would be creepy if he wasn't so handsome.
Yeah.
This is an example of someone who's not as handsome, who can't get away with smiling for no reason.
As a professional dancer, for 20, 30 years, he was taught to smile for hours and hours on end as he does the jitterbug and whatnot.
He needs more jazz hands when he's doing that smile.
Yeah, if he was doing jazz hands throughout this movie, I mean, I'm sure it would have been more inspiring.
Or if he just
to
did more
troops.
Posturing, like more stiff, you know, the dancer posture.
Instead of just being
a plié now and then.
Yeah. Just being a skeleton.
So so Prosser gets popped in the head because he's her daddy now.
I guess. I don't know. Who knows? So, he's dead.
So he gets popped, even though he gets shot in the head, but he continues talking, which is weird.
yeah, smiling and like all this weird stuff.
Rat at that point.
Yeah. So so they leave. Everything, you know, is all good, and it's the new world order. Or whatever. What was it? The New Age?
New Age.
And there's
new
that
way.
There's that
new way. Yeah.
There's that fucking long scene.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Of like, because they're in right. this, like. Like
another scene that lasts way too
it's
long.
Like the celebratory scene, which is like in
they're
the.
In like, yeah, they're in like an airplane
warehouse.
Hangar or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And there's a stage, and all like the weird Roman outfits are back.
Yeah.
And then there's people up on all the scaffolding, like four or five rows of scaffolding.
Which is like everybody that's been in the movie so far.
It's like everybody's come out to take their curtain call.
Yes. Seriously, it's like a way to appreciate all the extras, basically.
And I'm not sure if you noticed, all the clicks and stuff, they're all separated. Like they've all been seated so that they're mixed in together appropriately.
Like the geeks or with the
Yeah, they're all together now. Yeah.
So it's basically like the gathering of the gangs when Cyrus organizes everything and the warriors.
And the camera goes row by row very slowly so you can see everybody. And it's kind of like, you know, in a concert where like a big concert, like an arena concert where like someone will the artist will stop and name everybody in the band, and you're like, I don't give a fuck. Like, is this, and they're all just jamming out, and you're like, this is so stupid.
Like,
this
here's
so
the drummer, he does a solo, and then they go to the saxophone player.
Yeah, it's like that, but imagine if the band was like 80 people.
Yeah. and the camera panned at like one person every 2 seconds.
It pans across the top row of the scaffold, then it goes down, pans backwards along the next row. Yeah. It does this for four rows of the scaffolding.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
It's
so,
like just when you think it can't
really
go any longer.
Energetic clapping too.
So you think like there's victory for them, and then
dun, dun, dun.
We see the Prosser.
Donald.
But what? The Prosser's in a leather jacket. He's a cool guy now. He still has
really
a glove.
Dr. Loomis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's hanging out with Lando.
Dr. Arthur Loomis Fonzarelli.
Yeah, he's hanging out with the henchman because the henchman's a double crosser.
Yep.
He wasn't on stage with the other Caesars because he's the Black Caesar. The original Black Caesar.
So is he like a cyborg or what?
I don't think
Did he get shot in the head and then he survived it because
he's
a cyborg?
No, he made a cyborg.
I think the cyborg was like a fake.
Yeah, I think that's.
Yeah,
you know,
I think he knew that the end was.
It was like
near.
A decoy.
Yeah, the end was nigh, and so he made a decoy.
But they show that when they put him in front of this hexagon, which looks like he's going to go into an MRI machine or maybe be cremated or
but
maybe
did you
shot
hear him
out of
talking?
An airlock.
He was also talking to the people who were doing the autopsy.
Yeah, like,
I think he wanted to see
that was his voice.
He was like up above watching this.
Yeah, he was acting like, is like, you know, did this survive?
I thought those
survive?
Were like his medical team healing him because he was basically a cyborg who was easy to heal.
No.
I think they wanted to see if they could like use the that cyborg again.
I think that's
it was,
what
like,
it was.
Scrap, so
yeah,
said, like,
the point is
because they said the body was bad, but the computer parts
the programming.
Were okay, or,
yeah, like all the circuitry was fine.
And then he said burn the body, and then you actually see him come in this like, you know, super Hitler-esque like black leather jacket. Yeah.
Hitler/Fonzie-esque.
Yeah, and he does this like talk where it's like, did they do it? Do they feel like they accomplished something? All right, let's get out of here.
Those fools. Yeah. Fred Williamson is like, it's incredible the gullibility of these guys.
It's weird.
And then after that, the rider and the lady, they have a romantic moment, helped on by the motorcycle.
Yeah.
And then
for
the movie
some
ends.
Reason, back.
Yeah, I think that the movie was definitely trying to leave itself open for a sequel because really nothing changed. Yeah. Like the evil guy's still alive.
Yep.
Nothing really matters.
Lando's still alive.
I don't know where he's gonna go. I guess he's just gonna go brainwash a new group of people away.
He's just the master and the commander rides off into the sunset again, and he does again one of those heat wave, you know,
30-second
shots.
Zoom out this time of him driving away.
Yeah,
so weird.
Stay tuned for Warrior of the Found World.
Yeah, it almost ended exactly like how it began, but instead of like the guy driving into the shot for 30 seconds in the wavy heat, he's driving out of the shot for 30 seconds in the wavy heat.
Yeah,
that's it. That's how it ends.
Yeah, it leaves it up into a sequel so much so that when Lindsay searched for the Road Warrior of the Lost World,
Road
Google auto completed it to Warrior of the Lost World sequel.
Yeah. I thought there might have been a sequel, but no. Well,
there are so many of these Italian post-apocalyptic movies. I'm sure one of them is basically a sequel to this, just with all new actors.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's called Fury Road or something. Oh, wait.
No.
Oh, man.
No.
Warrior
not related.
Of the Furious Area.
Warrior of the Furious Carway.
Oh, and in one of the chase scenes, I wrote this down. I don't know. I didn't really write any context for it, but there was a crotch grenade where someone threw a grenade into someone's crotch while they were driving, which was kind of cool.
It didn't emerge from their crotch?
No. They threw it into the car and landed in their crotch.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a classic way to throw a grenade.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. You hope that even if it's not a grenade that will actually explode, you know, you hope you get the guy to panic and then crash the car.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is weird because in
old dead grenade trick
in the in one of the beginning scenes there's a grenade that the writer uses, but it's a weird like short tube. It doesn't look like a regular grenade.
Yeah, that's right.
It might also even just be from like a smoke bomb or something. Yeah.
Also from Q.
But yeah, also from Q. But in the end scene where it's a crotch grenade, it's an actual grenade. Like there's so
there's various grenades
variants.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's also a flamethrower on top of the war machine.
That's true.
And there's also a little pen flamethrower that had more fire than the war weapon.
Yeah.
I don't know how. Even know how they did that effect.
Well, it was just a dump truck.
How did they do that effect? I want to know.
You can put a lot of kerosene in a dump truck.
Yeah. No, I mean in the pen. How did they do that pen? Yeah.
It was hooked up to the dump truck.
Yeah. In the cave.
It's the invisible dump truck.
Yeah. But, well, but.
Yeah, we've been talking for a while.
Yeah,
here.
I think we should probably just rate this now.
Let's rate it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Is this a get it or forget it?
Is this forgettable or rememberable?
Rememberable. I'll start. I love post-apocalyptic movies.
Yeah.
This wasn't the best ever made, but it was probably the best we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Of the post-apocalyptic
movies. Movies.
Yeah,
no,
sure.
It was no Bronx Warriors 1990.
Yeah. But I'm going to stick this number two.
Wow.
Yeah.
Number two.
It's going to supersede the recent Dead Pit number two and jump right in there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That was really the only obstacle. Was it better than Dead Pit or not? And eventually I said yes.
Yeah, I think
mostly because of the
the
Dead Pit had no music in particular that you'll ever notice. No. So that's one advantage of this.
Yes.
And also, as well as the beginning and end scene being the same, the beginning and theme music are the same.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna say that I think we're at the point here where do you think we could have ties?
No,
I'm having really trouble distinguishing this between this and Final Mission. They have a lot of similarities.
They do.
One's better than the other, though. So one's better than
one's
the other.
One's obviously better than the
yeah,
other.
Yeah, and if you make the wrong decision, well. Yeah.
Okay. Talk to me, it's two
will become the Mike R replay and not the Mike D break.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put this ahead of Final Mission because of you guys' infectious enthusiasm.
Yeah.
It's number four on my list.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very incompetent in many ways. I mean, I don't know why I have society so high. Probably because it accomplishes everything it sets out to accomplish. But I've got this movie right behind society.
Well, you know what? That really does put it
being creepy.
That really does make it pretty exceptional for all the movies we've watched.
Yeah. So this is number four. Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Now for me.
Yeah. You borrow it.
Yeah.
I was really struggling with this too. I wasn't sure whether to put it above or below Russian Terminator because I just have Russian Terminator has such a there's such a soft spot in my heart for it, and I think it's also because the episode was destroyed and we had to do a recap of it. So part of both of those things make me really really love it. But
what if this movie was all actors with Danish accents?
you bastards.
And see, I think that's because it didn't have the dialogue component. That's why I'm putting it right below Russian Terminator. So it's number three for me.
Fair enough.
I've been doing a lot of last minute changing of where this goes because here's the thing. Movies with
the thing is.
With movies where it's a lot of chasing and not a lot of dialogue and the plot's really thin, I get bored with that. Like I watched the new Mad Max and I watched the new Entourage and I enjoyed Entourage better.
What?
Because what? I am a person who just gets bored at action movies that are just driving.
Oh, man.
Because I can appreciate like the beauty of a movie and like the special effects that are fun and everything. So I had a hard time placing this one.
That's cray.
If the what was it? The convoy war machine vehicle in Mad Max had a squeaky voice and was always talking.
I would hate it so much.
But no, then it would have more dialogue. You'd like it better.
No, but like at least my thing is with Entourage, I can have fun making fun of it. You know what I mean? God. Like Mad Max, I couldn't make fun. Anyway, so I'm getting off track here. So I'm actually gonna rate this higher.
Higher than Mad Max.
Yeah, this is better than Mad Max Fury Road for sure.
Poor man's Russell Crowe beats the hell out of Tom Hardy.
Yeah. I'm gonna put it in number four. That's gonna be above Frozen Assets.
Finally, you put something above Frozen Assets.
And below Airborne. There are three things above Frozen Assets before I added this on. So, it just didn't beat out Frozen Assets for me. It accomplished everything that it set out to accomplish. Yeah, so.
I would disagree with that.
Thank you.